Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Don't you just love it?
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Very superstitious.
Time, hour number two here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Thursday, April 23rd, 2026 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, J-Ham with you. We're live and local, broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Right now, 65, warming up to 84 today, breezy with partial sunshine, and then a strong possibility of some precipitation tomorrow, including some thunder boomers. High tomorrow, 73. Over the weekend, 82 Saturday for a high. Sunday, 79. A better chance for some rain on Saturday. Sunday, about a 25% chance. And then Monday, we'll open up the new work week with a chance of thunder showers as well. Coming up in hour two, Kerry Miller will join us at 8:25. We got a lot of topics we haven't even touched on. Talked plenty of NBA playoffs and the NBA in general in hour number one, including the comments made by Commissioner Adam Silver yesterday about the city of Memphis and the Grizzlies. If you'd like to participate in the program, you certainly can. You can hit us up on the Sissy's Law Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. We have the NFL draft, which begins tonight. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on. We have a NBA draft that won't take place until June, but certainly around here, there's going to be a lot of conversation leading up to that. The draft lottery will take place on May 10th, so we're closing in on that, Eli. But I was looking at Kevin O'Connor from Yahoo Sports. He posted just about a half an hour ago his latest mock draft. And again, you don't know the exact order in the lottery, so right now it's a guessing game. But in this mock, he has the Grizzlies actually falling to number nine. But with the number nine pick, they get Kingston Flemings. Would you sign up for that right now?
I'll take any one of the four point guards. I don't care which one it is. I'm fine with any one of the four.
See, he has Braden Burries going to the Utah Jazz at number eight, right behind Acuff, Mikel Brown, and Keaton Wagler. Of those point guards we talked about, he is the top pick, according to O'Connor. And then right after Flemings, he's got Filon, LeBaron Filon from Alabama, going number 10 to, I think that's the Mavericks. I'm looking at that logo going, is that the Mavericks logo? But he's got DeBonsa 1, Caleb Wilson 2, Boozer 3, Peterson 4. And then, as I said, Wagler, Brown, Acuff, Burries, Flemings, Filon would be the top 10.
I don't believe Caleb Wilson will be number two.
I don't believe Caleb Wilson will be number two. Do you believe that of the four point guards that we talk about, and again, there's some others, but the four we talk about, that if Memphis does fall to nine, they would have an opportunity to get one of them?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay.
I think I still believe that the top four are the top four, and the next four, if maybe there's a team in there that just doesn't need a point guard that's one of those, maybe they go a different direction and you could get one of them to fall to you. But I certainly want to be in the top eight to ensure knowing that one of those is getting to you.
Big college football news yesterday. Kalen DeBoer gets a new 7-year, $87.5 million contract. There's a $10 million buyout is it January 31st, 2027? I think that's when it goes till January 31st, 2027. In other words, if he left before that, the buyout's $10 million. Kalen DeBoer, mixed bag. He's done a good job, but you're following Nick Saban. You're following the greatest coach to ever live, arguably, as far as college football is concerned. Enormous shoes to fill. I didn't expect, though, they turn around and give him that type of an extension or new contract. Maybe they just ripped it up, right, and gave him a new contract. 7 years, $87.5 million. Was it warranted? Did they have to do that? Are they craving other teams right now for Kalen DeBoer?
It makes no sense. Like there was no reason at this point to give him an extension.
Right.
I mean, getting Alabama into the playoffs, whatever. Okay, that
should happen. That's no matter who's the coach.
Got embarrassed in the playoffs. At this point, you're not trying to keep him from somebody until after maybe next season. So I don't like the idea of giving him a couple more years from. And I mean, it's not like you got to be the whole recruiting or anything like that. I mean, none of that makes. I have no clue why in the world they thought it was a need to give Kalen DeBoer this type of extra years.
You know how I feel about that with the coaches, that it's supply and demand. And I understand when the demand is really high and you're trying to keep said player, said coach. But with this situation, I don't get it. I don't understand it at all. Yeah, they're committed to Kalen DeBoer. Did they have to emphasize that with this new deal? Did he deserve something like this? I mean, that is a huge contract, but Alabama throwing around money like it's water, and they got their guy. We'll see if, look, again, the expectations to live up to are extremely high, and he had success before he came to Alabama, but Alabama's expected every year to be right there in the mix, and they think with Kalen DeBoer, they will be. We were talking yesterday about the meetings that took place down in the Dallas area about college football with the 10 commissioners and Pete Bavakwa, Notre Dame, AD. And I'm reading a story from Heather Dinich that once again, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey reiterated his league's preference for a 16-team field following the wrap-up of the college football playoff spring meetings. Again, they wrapped up yesterday. The Big Ten, of course, proposed the 24-team playoff. There's others that like it to be 24, more money. Certainly Fox, the network, we've had the CEO or the president of Fox come out and say, yeah, they would love that because they want a piece of the pie, of the playoff pie. We also know, because some of these coaches and ADs have come out publicly, even in the SEC, they've come out and said that they would prefer more teams because if you have more teams, there's more chances that your team gets in. But Greg Sankey, once again, putting that foot down. And as I said yesterday, you can have all these other commissioners at these gatherings, including power conference commissioners from the Big 12 and from the ACC. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All that matters is what the guys in the Big Ten, Tony Petitti, and in the SEC, Greg Sankey, are saying. And right now, it seems like it's an impasse. We know it's staying at 12 for this year, but they are already starting to move on what will happen next year. And you don't want to get to that point again in December where they're still trying to figure it out, and then they just can't come to a conclusion, and then we roll out 12 again. Not that it's the worst thing to have 12, but I'm in agreement with Sankey. I think 16 is the number. That's just my personal preference. Others like 24. I just think it waters down things when you have too many teams.
He also said, he always asked about the SEC championship. He said, listen, we've got contracts. So
contracts are made to be broken.
I think, I don't know why he's being so kind of stubborn on the 16. I'm assuming it's a leverage ploy. He's trying to get it to get something. If he is willing to go to the 24, he wants something in return, whatever that is. I don't know. It may also be that the fact that he knows ESPN doesn't want 24 and he is going to stand, side by side with ESPN and whatever they want with the amount of money that they give the SEC every year. But it's, the more and more you look at it, the more and more support. Again, we talked about the White House subcommittee, and he admitted he was not a part of the call last week that they had, but it seems like the overwhelming support now with more and more people are going towards the side of making it 24, and he could be alone on an island. It might be he and ESPN on an island. Now, again, that's a lot of power.
That's a lot of power.
That is a very powerful island when you've got the SEC and ESPN together. But I don't know. I don't know if that island can hold up.
College Football Playoff Executive Director Rich Clark said that while some commissioners have a model they prefer, the room is open to discussing all options. He said that if any changes are going to be made in time for the 2027 season, the decision needs to be made by December 1st. Sankey said, we'll see, when asked if he and Petitti can reach a consensus by the December 1st deadline. It was followed by about, I'm reading right from this story from Heather Dinich, it was followed by about 20 seconds of what Sankey described as awkward silence. Petitti declined comment following the meetings. Again, they're going to aren't they having a big MMA event, UFC event on the lawn at the White House?
Yeah, but I'm not sure when it is, but I do know they have one planned.
Yeah, but if it's planned this year before December 1st, Sankey versus Petitti, put that on the bill, right? Winner gets his preference. Settle it in the squared circle. I mean, my gosh, these guys are like two babies. It's like rich and richer.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know what the other bargaining points are. Like, you got to be saying, like, okay, if we do that, we get this. I don't know if it's just we get a bigger share of the money. Like, I don't know what other things can be on the table between the two to have a negotiation. Like, you guys throw us a team, a school? I don't know. Like, I just don't know what else there is other than the money. Again, like, if you're just asking for, all right, if we go to 24, we want a bigger percentage of the money or something. I just don't know what else there could be negotiations to decide 16 or 24 if you guys are standing firm one against the other.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, Petitti, though, I could see him going, okay, let's do a 24-team playoff.
The problem
we'll take 10 of our teams and 10 of your teams, so that's 20 of the 24 right there.
The problem is with if you try and settle it with a fight, you're going to have Petitti's got all the other commissioners running into the ring to help him. Sankey has nobody else coming to help him.
No.
Apparently, from what you read, it looks like everybody's just fine with 24. Now, maybe some of these others would really rather have – maybe that would be a way to figure out where you really are if you had the two of them fighting and you could see who would come in and support the other one. But it seems – so maybe they're all just – maybe these others are just like, we're fine with 24 because we kind of feel like we know that's where it's going to end up anyway. And so we just want to be on the right side of history. we're just going to say we're there. It's like being on Survivor. You always want to be on the right side of the vote. And so if you're like, we know where this is headed. It's going to end up with 24, so let's just save ourselves time and get there to begin with. But for whatever reason, Sankey just doesn't want to do that.
Well, that would be my preference in anything. If you're going to eventually get to this point, then just go to that point. We don't want to see it incrementally like, okay, we'll go 12, then we'll go to 16 for a few years, but we're ultimately going to 24. Just rip off the Band-Aid and go to 24. I don't like it. I don't like 24, but I don't have a say in the matter. It's just my personal opinion. But if you're going to eventually go to 24, go to 24 then. Shut up, Sankey. Sankey knows how powerful he is. Individually, he's the most powerful person in college football. Him, Jimmy Sexton's up there. Petitti's powerful, but I don't know if he's as powerful as Sankey. They say they're even, but I don't know, man. But like you said, Roman Reigns ain't coming through the ring, through the ropes to come to his aid. He's alone in that battle royale against a bunch of other guys. And I'll tell you what, I know how big Tim Pernetti is. I would take Tim Pernetti in a street fight over any of those commissioners.
I love one of the other things that they were trying to decide and apparently couldn't reach a conclusion on is how much money UConn gets. Like, how... Seriously, how much debate can there really be about that? Just, hey, set a number and everybody move along. But they apparently could not reach a conclusion on that. They can't reach a conclusion on anything.
That's a problem.
I think UConn only gets right now like $350,000 or something like that.
What?
It's a ridiculously low number. But like they can't decide how much they're supposed to get or they should get as an independent.
$350,000? That's what they tip the DoorDash guy at the meetings when he brings the food. I mean, are you kidding me?
The money they're making? I want to say it may be a little more, but it's ridiculous. Like, when I saw the number, I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, that's it? That's all they're giving them out of the college football playoff share. And so that's one of the things that they keep trying to decide is what they're supposed to get. But I saw that they said that they could not come to a decision on that. It's like, my God, UConn's got to be like, seriously? Like, just throw us a bone. Like, come up with a number and we'll be fine with it. Just more than what we make right now.
What kind of pizza you guys want? You want pepperoni? Oh, no, we don't want pepperoni. We want mushroom. Wait, you want mushroom? Can we mix the two? No, we don't want to mix the two. Have a sausage. You can't even come to a conclusion on the damn pizza they order for the lunch. So, yeah, they're not going to come to any agreement on anything, apparently. One other quick story before we take the break. On the other side, Kerry Miller joins us from Bleacher Report. More on the Mike Vrabel, Diana Rossini thing. I didn't see this one coming. But after he had spoke publicly, didn't say a whole lot, but said that he had spoke to the people that are important in his life, his family, the players, all that. Mike Vrabel is going to seek counseling, and he will miss day three of the NFL draft. Okay, two things come to mind. Number one, they must not put a lot of importance on the third day of the NFL draft. That's number one. Number two, is it so bad and urgent that Mike Vrabel can't wait until Monday or even Sunday to begin the counseling? The draft starts tonight. Day three is Saturday. He has to get the counseling? Is it that bad? Do we have a... Didn't Tiger Woods have a like a sex problem or something? Is that what we got with Mike Vrabel here? You can't keep it in the pants? Is that what are we talking about here?
I mean,
but then we have a guy that had an affair.
Yeah, the guy that had an affair.
He's not the only one who's had an affair. But my God, seeking counseling while the draft's going on.
Well, I mean, it got pretty much aired out publicly.
Yeah, but again, he can't wait until Monday.
I don't think that as a head coach, most of the head coaches, certainly most of them don't know the guy's being drafted on day three. They leave that up to scouts and GMs. Like, he's not going to be in there to fight for some guy who he's probably never watched play.
Well, I don't know about that. There are some coaches that are really involved in the draft with every single damn pick, even though the general manager is usually the one making the call. The head coach has a big say in that. Some are more involved than others, but I would think most coaches are involved with the players that are being brought in. They also put them on the phone. They talk to the players. Round four is Saturday. I mean, you're finding guys in the fourth round and fifth round. You know, maybe a little bit less chance in the sixth, seventh, but that's possible too. I just don't get it.
I'm impressed that he was able to find a therapist that's going to see him on the weekend.
I mean, we kid because we care, Mike. I mean, I really – and in the meantime, Rossini – I mean, nobody seems to care about her. Like, it's unfortunate when these things happen, the woman gets the blame most of the time.
With the exception of M.A. Udoka. He took all
right.
Of that.
Right. No, yeah, and we talked about that yesterday. But both of them were married, so it wasn't like she was single. And again, we're assuming now, again, that something did happen, but with all the actions in the last couple of days. What else are you going
to
assume?
They left us nothing but to assume anything different.
Hour two of the program brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers, 4900 Poplar between Mendenhall and St. Nick, on the web at gaddisjewelers.com. I think Mike's going to be spending a lot of money on jewelry for his lovely wife. I would think that would be the case. If you are looking for a beautiful piece of jewelry, from a watch to necklaces to bracelets to earrings, all kinds of estate and vintage jewelry, James Gaddis Jewelers has it for you. And, of course, they are your bridal, engagement, and anniversary jeweler headquarters. So if you're looking for that special engagement ring, wedding ring, personally designed wedding sets, make sure James Gaddis Jewelers is one of the jewelers that you check out. They are full-service jewelers with two bench jewelers ready to serve you. All their diamonds are independently graded and certified. They understand there's a lot of competition, so they make sure they have a price point to suit everyone's budget. They have the beautiful natural earth diamonds along with lab-grown diamonds as well. Great value, great customer service. Check out their great reviews as well. The staff is second to none. They'll buy your gold, silver, and diamonds. And right now, gold being sold at a record high. As I mentioned, watches both for men and for women. 60 years they've been in existence. 60 years serving Memphians and Mid-Southerners. Go check out James Gaddis Jewelers today, this weekend. They're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, Saturday, 10 to 4. They are closed on Sunday. They're your family's jeweler and the second hour sponsor of Sports 56 Mornings. They are James Gaddis Jewelers. When we come back, Kerry Miller on Major League Baseball. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
It's 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers.
Diamonds are forever. Woo!
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:27 the time. We're about halfway home on this Thursday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. Time now to talk with Kerry Miller.
We have no Kerry Miller open anymore. Remember, last Thursday we kind of freestyled it.
Oh, okay. Where did it go? Did it disappear?
It just wasn't on our board.
All right, we'll figure it out. So no opening for Kerry Miller. This is Not as exciting as having the music. Sorry, Kerry. Kerry Miller joins us from Bleacher Report. He covers both Major League Baseball and men's college basketball. Also the co-host of the Unnamed Bracketology podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Karen's James. I promise we will get to the bottom of this. We need the open for Kerry Miller. How are you, Kerry?
I'm good. Maybe this is just a sign that after like 2 years of the same walk-up song, I need to switch it up.
Let me know if you need to switch that up. I don't know where it went, but we have a mystery audio board sometimes. How you doing? Everything good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Actually, funny thing is, my daughter's softball team, they were just picking their walk-up music for their games yesterday. So, yeah.
Did you get some ideas?
What's that?
Did you get some ideas for a new one for you?
Yeah, no, she picked a weird one. I told her to go with Narco because I love, well, we won't see it from Edwin Diaz in the next 3 months,
no,
but I love that Timmy Trumpet walk-up.
How old is she?
Almost 8. So,
and she has they have walk-up music?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh. We barely had uniforms when I was in Little League and in farm system and all that stuff like that growing up. But, okay, so what would be, Eli, what would be your walk-up music?
I'd have to think about that.
Some kind of country song, I'd imagine. mine's easy. Born to Run, Springsteen. Easy. I've always thought that for years and years and years. And Kerry, I mean, I know you have certain type of music that you play on your open that we didn't have today, but what would you do as far as a walk-up song for you?
Yeah, I've always thought more of like what my closer entrance would be. I need more time. But I liked the coming out to the theme song from the Saw franchise. I think that would be terrorizing for opposing teams.
I don't think anybody could top Enter Sandman for Rivera.
No.
I think that broke the mold right there. Like, you can come close, but I don't think anybody can top that. By the way, before we talk baseball, since you're in D.C., are you a fan of the Commanders? Gary?
Hello? Lost you.
Hello? Can you hear us?
There, I hear you.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on. Kerry, are you a fan of the Commanders?
No, I'm not.
Do you have an NFL team?
I used to be a Chiefs fan. Funny, they got good, and I kind of stopped caring about the NFL.
The opposite of a bandwagon fan.
Right?
No, they're good now. I don't like them anymore.
So you won't be watching the NFL draft, I assume.
No, but if I'm sure I'll hear about it on, you know, the junkies and whatnot on 106.7 The Fan if I end up going anywhere.
Hey, a little fun fact. One of the junkies was an intern for me in television in Salisbury, Maryland. Yeah, Bishop.
Nice.
Was it Jason, right?
Maybe.
Jason Bishop.
Now I know it's B. Mitch and Jay Finley. That's not the junkies, but they're on the noon or whatever.
Yeah, they call him Lurch or something like that on whatever. He was an intern for me way back when, part of the junkies. All right, so yesterday Logan Gilbert almost got killed. Carlos Cortez, they said it was 107.8 miles per hour. He hit the liner right back at Logan Gilbert, the Seattle pitcher. And the ball somehow lodged in his jersey and got lost for a second. He grabbed at his stomach. He tried to locate the ball. And then he eventually found it. It was in his shirt. I mean, what? That's crazy.
Yeah, that was That was insane. The insane thing is that it was ruled a hit instead of an out, even though the ball didn't hit the ground. I know that, like, with catchers, if, like, the ball skips and, like, gets caught in their equipment or something, you know, that's like a dead ball. If a ball gets stuck in a glove, you know, in the webbing, then that's a dead. I don't know how in the world that's a hit, though. Like, let him have that, regardless of what the rules are, because, like you said, he almost died.
Well, I don't even understand. I didn't know that until you just said that they ruled it a hit. That why? I mean, you can catch a fly ball in your hat if you want to, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't. I have no idea. The ball never hit the ground. I don't know how that's a hit.
Yeah, I saw that last night. I had no idea that was the rule. But yeah, it doesn't quite make a whole lot of sense to me. But nonetheless, that is what it is. What? If I would have told you that at this point in the season, still very early, that your Washington Nationals would be only one run behind Atlanta for the highest scoring team in Major League Baseball, would you have believed that?
No, I wouldn't have believed that they're in second place in the NL East either. I thought that's where you're going.
Or ahead of the Phillies and Mets at this point either.
No, I mean they've had some good pieces in that offense for the last few years, but I knew the pitching was going to be god-awful. They're still trotting Miles Michaelis out there every fifth day, although they've started using an opener for him so that they have at least one inning of hope on one of the days when he's pitching. But, yeah, they've got some offense, their pitching staff is just so far away from being competitive.
Yeah, while they're only one run behind the Braves in offense, they are many runs behind them in runs allowed. They've given up by a wide margin the most runs in baseball. But what that division, I mean, obviously the Braves are playing great, but with the Phillies now losing eight straight, the Mets just coming off the 12-game losing streak, what the hell's going on in that division?
Yeah, I mean, we figured that would be maybe if any division in baseball was going to put three teams in the playoffs, we assumed it was going to be the NL East, you know, 3-4 weeks ago. And now only one team above 500. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Cubs are just better than we thought, and they're taking advantage of the Phillies and the Mets right now. So I think they've played nine straight against them. Seems like every day it's, you know, one of those NL East teams extended their losing streak as the Cubs get a win. So I think maybe that's part of it, but yeah, both those teams just cannot score to save their lives, especially the Mets. I mean, they were so intent on run prevention in the offseason that they, you know, overlooked the fact that you do need to score from time to time.
That's what I look at. What even makes the Nationals stand out more is you see the Nationals have scored 142 runs, the Phillies have scored 82, and the Mets have scored 78.
Yeah, they've almost scored as much as those two teams combined, which is just absurd when you consider how much money both of those teams have invested in their position players. But yeah, and I mean, during that 12-game losing streak, I think there were, if my memory and numbers are correct, there were 10 Mets who had at least like 19 plate appearances. Half of them hit below 200. None of them hit 250. Like, people want to fire Carlos Mendoza. I get it. That's what happens when teams are down in the dumps, but I mean, he's not the one hitting. I don't know what they want him to do.
Well, maybe it's because of his name. They all want to stay below the Mendoza line.
Well, of course, when you don't have, you know, Soto's 353, he's 1-for-3, but he's missed time. But you off season, you lose Alonso, you lose the polar bear. I mean, it's coming back to haunt him to not have that big bat of Pete Alonso. That certainly has hurt the Mets. Not having him. But the Phillies, look, man, they are minus 50 run differential. Minus 50. I'll give you some other teams. The White Sox are minus 29. The Royals are minus 35. They're the second worst. The Phillies are a minus 50. Carey, minus 50, for goodness sakes. None of those guys are hitting. And also, pitching has been suspect. They're going to get Wheeler back. I don't understand. Eight-game losing streak is the longest since 2018 for them when they lost nine in a row. I know I don't know if it was the Mets owner when he came out and said Mendoza wasn't in trouble, and then they won last night to end the 12-game losing streak. But, or was it, it might have been the GM came out and said that Thompson was not in trouble. But the Phillies now on an eight-game losing streak. I wonder, though, Carey, if Rob Thompson could be in trouble and they could flip the switch and make a change to try to ignite this team. They're too good. Their payroll's too high. They have too many stars to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, nobody reasonably thought that this team would have a minus 50 run differential at this point in the season. But there were some major concerns about just basically running it back again with a team that's 1 year older. I mean, Harper and Schwarber are carrying that offense, but they're not hitting at, you know, MVP levels by any means. But, you know, Bohm has been terrible. Mm-hmm. Crawford, the rookie center fielder, he's looking like a rookie center fielder. He's not really hitting for much power. He's got decent average, but I don't think he's providing much value for them. Like, they just kind of did the same thing they had last year and hope for the best. And it's not working outside of Christopher Sanchez pitching like a, you know, potential Cy Young winner.
Yeah, Reyes in the starting lineup played first base last night, 273, tops on the team. I mean, we're talking 207, 235, 261, 212, 146, 203, 281. Crawford, I guess, is a little bit higher than Reyes, but it's terrible. Stott is 203. He wasn't even starting. Came in as a pinch hitter. Yeah. So anyway, really bad.
Where did this Jose Soriano start come from?
That is a fantastic question. But yeah, he is what, an 0.28 ERA or 2. Whatever, like 24. One run allowed and 37 innings pitched or something insane. Yeah, he's been incredible. I mean, I know there were big expectations for him early on, and he had his moments in previous years, but never anything like this. Usually it was, he was just walking guys too often, and then, you know, that was compounding. I think last year he had like a 1.4 whip, and now it's like a 0.8. And it's mostly, he's just not putting runners on base, which is a nice place to start for run prevention. But yeah, he's really locked in. He's got really good swing and miss stuff this year, which I don't think he was anywhere near this strikeout prone in the past. So, yeah. I mean, and unfortunately, it's not really much helping the Angels, right? They're still two games below 500.
You got him pitching like that. Mike Trout's actually hitting, and like they're still below 500. But yeah, I mean, 5-0, 0.24. Shohei got his ERA down to 0.38, and this guy's better than that.
Yeah, what, Shohei's one run allowed in 24 innings pitch. I think he's gone six innings in each of his four starts, and trying to add to his trophy case with a Cy Young award. I don't think he's going to pitch enough innings to get there, though. But if he keeps his ERA below one, that's another story.
Yeah, six innings last night, seven Ks, five hits. That's all he allows. But the Dodgers, to be stymied, they lost 3-0. So they had no support for Shohei offensively. That is a rarity.
Yeah, they should have let Dalton Rushing DH for him again like last time when he homered.
That's right.
But yeah, I think Shohei, because he had that on base streak that ended last night, 53 games. So
and then I know after they were talking about maybe resting him some on the day, you know, not having him bad on the days he pitches. But that does have to be a lot. Like when you are pitching and hitting in the same game for him, it's, you know, you'd think maybe that you want to give him a day off here or there on the hitting side when he is pitching.
Yeah, I mean, certainly early in the year, you might as well, you know, as much as they, you know, slow rolled him into the mix last year until, right, when he made his debut, pitching debut around the All-Star break, and it was like one inning, one and a half, two innings, and, you know, work him up, make sure he's good for October. But we do enjoy those sequences where he gets a strikeout and then has to run in and quickly put on all his equipment to hit. And yes, you know, sometimes he forgets that it's his turn to hit, and then that's even funnier.
We have another Japanese sensation, Munetaka Murakami. He's hit home runs now five straight games. He is the 13th rookie of all time to do so since they started keeping records. I can't believe they have records back to 1900, but they do. 13th Major League Baseball rookie since 1900 to put together that type of streak. Five home runs in five straight games. And these Japanese players, more and more are coming over and more are really showcasing their skills.
Yeah, we knew Murakami had the power. I don't remember what the number was. He had something like 265 home runs in Japan. The question was, you know, his nickname was the Babe Ruth of Higo or Japanese Babe Ruth, whatever, but we were worried he might be the Joey Gallo of Higo, like, because he walks and he's strikes out a lot, right. But he's gotten the strikeouts relatively under control. I mean, he's still, you know, he's up there with Adam Dunn as far as the three true outcomes go. I think he's 10 home runs, 21 walks, 32 strikeouts in 104 plate appearances. That's over 60%. That's crazy. But it's 50-50 in terms of home runs and walks versus strikeouts. So the White Sox are perfectly happy with that. Granted, they're also well below 500, and I think we are rapidly approaching some fun conversations about whether he might get traded, because they signed him to just a 2-year, $34 million deal. And I, you know, they're still very much in the middle of their rebuild, and I think they could get quite a bit for him if they were to dangle him. I don't think they're going to be able to necessarily re-sign him after that 2-year deal expires. So that could be the, you know, the main attraction of this year's deadline.
He's in 256. It's not great, but it's not that terrible. But you're right. When he gets out, it's usually a strikeout. Yeah, you brought up who'd you bring up for a comparison?
Joey Gallo.
I would bring up Dave Kingman. I'm older. Dave Kingman, probably before your time. My gosh, that dude was home run or strikeout.
Carrie, yeah. Of the teams that had high expectations, that it's, again, it's obviously very early, but the Torontos, Bostons, Seattles, we talked about the Phillies, the Mets. Like, which of those teams should have maybe the highest level of concern?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, we were like all kind of freaking out about it, but then if you do look at the standings and like wild cards, they're all like four and a half games out. Like, they're not dead by any means. It's just been a rough start. But I'm concerned about the Red Sox, because I thought they were going to be potentially the best team in the American League, and they have not shown any of that. Crochet has pitched miserably as of late. Like, that's probably the biggest concern for me. But yeah, I mean, all four of those fan bases are in full-blown panic mode. You put the Mariners in there as well, four games below 500, but Astros, I think, are five or six games back. So we got a lot of the, I think, six of the preseason eight favorites to win the World Series are at least four games below 500 right now.
Yeah, a lot of baseball still to be played, but certainly, and that includes my team, the Phillies, some alarming starts to the season through the first 20-25 games of the season. Of course, Carey covers Major League Baseball and college basketball for Bleacher Report. He's the co-host of the Unnamed Bracketology podcast. You can hear him every single Wednesday right here on, or Thursday, I should say, right here on Sports 56 Mornings. And I promise we'll have that open fix for next week. Make sure to check that out and read all of Carey's stories. Also, best of luck to your daughter and her softball team. We'll be rooting for her.
Thank you. She got an RBI single last night. I was very proud.
Very nice. And follow Carey on Twitter at Karence James. All right. I'd say enjoy the draft, but you're not going to be watching it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Carey.
23 of the 30 teams in the major leagues are on either a one-game win streak or one-game loss streak. Not that that's a streak. It's not. But they've either won or lost. Like, there's the Yankees have a five-game winning streak. The Cubs with their eight-game winning streak. Phillies with the eight-game losing streak. Everybody else is one or two games. That's it. So it's great. But, yeah, it's
– So is there a parity with the exception of the Phillies?
Braves now with the best record in baseball. It's 17-8. And again, as he said, everybody else in their division is sitting at below 500, while every team in the NL Central is at least three games above 500. The Brewers at 13-10 are in last place in the division.
Jeez, that'll change. Our buddy, friend of the show, Hunter Goodman, starting to heat up for the Rockies last night. 3-for-4, couple of runs scored, hit a home run, had a walk as well. His average is up to .264. He had two doubles in the game as well. He's up to six doubles, six home runs, nine runs batted in for the Rockies, who beat the Padres last night 8-3.
Folks, breakfast means one thing here in Memphis. That would be Sunrise. If you're thinking about grabbing some breakfast on the way to work or wherever you're headed this morning, stop them by one of those two Sunrise locations. Grab you a little breakfast. Maybe grab one of those biscuit sandwiches. Or if you've got a little more time, maybe you want to sit down and have the kitchen sink, which is just a little bit of everything on the breakfast plate over at Sunrise. One of their breakfast bowls. All kinds of different items to choose from. And all are absolutely delicious. Those biscuit sandwiches on their house made big old square biscuits, absolutely fantastic. The one with the fried bologna, I love that one. The P-Love is what it is called. You got two locations where you could go by and get some of that delicious food. 670 Jefferson Avenue, that's the original, or 5469 Poplar Avenue, that's Sunrise East in East Memphis. They're open every day, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. for great breakfast, but also great lunch as well. Fantastic sandwiches and salads on that lunch menu. Also, they can do catering for any event as well, for breakfast or for lunch. You can go onto their website at sunrise901.com, get information about catering, check out the menu, get all the information you need, and you can order online to make it very easy and very quick for you to grab some food maybe on your way to work. Order online. When you get there, you pop in the side door, grab your food, and you are on your way with delicious food from Sunrise.
Was there yesterday with my buddy who's in from California, and certainly enjoyed some breakfast over there at Sunrise, and you can as well. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, our final segment in hour number two, we got the latest with Memphis and the transfer portal. We'll talk about that. Hour three, a lot on the NFL draft, which gets underway tonight. Again, we'll take your calls and texts on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Genuine diamonds, baby.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Transfer portal news. Charlotte struck again yesterday. 6'9 forward Tyler McKinley, who was at Cincinnati and was projected to be a starter along with Jizzy James for Wes Miller, who then was fired, is also headed to Charlotte. James to Charlotte. McKinley to Charlotte. They got the other player yesterday whose name escapes me. Wes Miller. I don't know where all of a sudden Charlotte's gotten money, but they're spending it. They're bringing in players. And all of a sudden now the Charlotte 49ers. I know people are chuckling right now listening. In the American Conference could be a factor in basketball. Now, one player they do not have back is Anton Bunk, the big 7'1" guy. He's headed to Michigan State. This goes back to what you've talked about, those numbers we had from who's the guy? Maekawa, that the centers are demanding the most money. This guy is a average at best guy. He's big. Michigan State bringing him in. Not sure exactly what they're paying him. We don't know. We'll probably never know. But Bonk goes to Michigan State. But Charlotte, again, with Wes Miller, brings in Tyler McKinley, who's a good forward.
Okay. Can we stop with this Charlotte stuff? I don't know what's going on with this.
I'm telling you.
Those two, Keyshawn Tillery and Tyler McKinley, averaged a combined 5.6 points.
Look at
a combined. Tyler McKinley averaged 1.8 points last year. We're acting like he's this massive addition.
For Charlotte in the American Conference, McKinley was penciled. He was going to be a starter in Cincinnati.
They would have been a terrible team if he's a starter. He averaged 1.8 points.
He probably didn't get that much playing time.
He started three games.
Look around
the played 25 games. He averaged 1.8 points.
How many minutes a game did he play?
He played 12 minutes.
Maybe he's more of a defensive guy. I don't know everything about this guy. The point
you don't know anything about him.
I could read, well, and I know that he was going to be a starter
else,
at Cincinnati.
Somebody else is trying to build up Charlotte.
These two guys
averaged a combined 5 points.
What do you have against Charlotte?
Jizzle James is good. I'll give him that.
He's really good.
That's a nice addition. And for Charlotte to go get a power conference kick, great. But can we quit acting like these guys are awesome? They average a combined 5.6 points.
First of all,
be laughing
if you look at
most teams
portal,
for getting this.
If you look at the portal, there's a lot of dudes like that average 2 points a game and end up getting a...
Yeah, Memphis got a bunch of them last year. We laughed about them, and what happened? They sucked.
Yeah, they also go to other schools as well because of the potential or the lack of playing time, so they bring them in. I'm not saying these guys will be great, but I'm saying that guy was penciled in as a starter on a Big 12 team. Jizzle James is really good. Okay, they brought in three guys already. This is the American Conference we're talking about. This is a crap conference. We've already talked about Florida Atlantic losing the players that they have lost. South Florida's lost players. Tulane lost Rowan Brumbaugh. I'm just saying that right now, Charlotte has made more moves that are impressive than Memphis so far through the portal.
Well, that they got Jizzle James.
That's what I'm saying.
But these other two guys don't count as that.
Well, how do you know?
Well, again, I can only go by what I see. They didn't do crap last year. If Memphis got them, I would make fun of that too, like I did the guys last year.
I'm right now looking at this team, and I'm going to go with Wes Miller's coach. I guarantee you that's a top four team in the conference. I don't even know the team. I'm telling you right now that they will finish in the top four.
Well, that doesn't take much of the American conference.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying you're now you have a team that was an also-ran. Actually, they did some decent things, and then they fired Hearn, the coach from Australia. I'm just saying Charlotte has made a couple of moves, and I'm going to give him credit. But here's the thing about Anton Bonk, and he wasn't coming back to Charlotte. He got money, obviously, to go to Michigan State. Good luck to him. When Memphis and Penny Hardaway brought in the assistant coaches that he brought in, the assumption was all those coaches were connected to a player that was going to end up at Memphis. I know that was the talk. The coach that played, the coach that was at Tulane, Sean Mock, we thought, well, Sean Mock coming in from Tulane, even though I think he wasn't coaching there anymore, but had the relationship, I guess, with Brumbaugh. Memphis will get Brumbaugh. That didn't happen. Tony Madlock, associate head coach, the kid, oh God, what's his name? Is it Stanbeck? The defensive guy, they thought maybe they're going to get him. Didn't get him. And then Trevor Deloach, who has the connections to Charlotte, and then he had also coached, I think, the year prior at UTSA. That was the Bonk connection. Like, there was the connection of these players with those coaches. I'm not saying Penny brought them in, thought he was absolutely getting those players. I'm just saying that was the conversation that these guys who really have, other than Tony with his connections, being a head coach at Alabama State and South Carolina State, he makes perfect sense. These other guys, while they could be very good coaches, don't have that much experience where they're brought into to Penny's coaching staff. We don't know what their expertise is, that I thought maybe, and others did, that there was the connection with those players. They didn't get any of those players. And then, of course, the other coach they brought in, Steve Wright, and he had been at Mizzou, correct?
Yes.
I'm not sure if there's a player connected there. But anyway, you have these coaches. The talk was the connection. They got none of those guys. But Bonk is going nowhere but to a power conference school. And he ends up getting, I'm sure, decent money, if not great money, at Michigan State from Tom Izzo. In the meantime, what's going on with Memphis? Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal reporting that Texas A&M transfer guard, Memphis native Josh Holloway, is planning on setting up a visit with Memphis real soon, potentially as soon as this week. He had just completed a visit to Missouri. So you got a guy, obviously the local connections, but he was in the SEC and just interviewed, made a visit to another SEC team. Would he go to Memphis when he has these SEC possibilities and, of course, played for an SEC team last year? It's the same with...
Well, the good news for him is Ja won't be here.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. The other thing is the player they brought in that's Ole Miss. Ole Miss is also trying to get him.
Tylik Weeks.
Yeah, Tylik Weeks from the Southern Miss, right?
Yeah.
Again, do you go to a school that's in the group of six, mid-major, or do you go to a power conference school? Again, the history will tell you Memphis has better history, basketball, longer history, more success. But that's all out the window now.
Depends it's all about money the money. Offering him.
It's how much money are they offering? So that would be an upset. If Memphis could pull the trigger and get those two guys, one who played at A&M, and is looking at Missouri, among other schools, and one Ole Miss is courting.
It depends where, you know, how big of a priority for those schools are they? If Memphis is making them their number one priority, and for Ole Miss he's a number six, you might offer more money.
You may. But again, I think...
And I know that Munns talked about on their podcast... That he also has a Weeks has a relationship with the
North Alabama guy,
Jerry Deng.
Oh, dang.
They go back to, I think they're both from New York. They go back, they have a relationship. Like there is a, they're, they have a, apparently a good relationship. So there is that tie for him as well. Don't know what, again, probably don't matter. Depends what, how much money you're offering, but there is a tie to between those two guys.
All right. There was a relationship, and I'm trying to remember, with Bradshaw and one of the recruits they were looking at. And obviously Bradshaw ended up jumping into the portal. So relationships don't always work out. Although in the case of Fred Smith and Cello Jackson, that relationship, both coming to Memphis, and of course Parker Pounds, a teammate of Fred at Briarcrest, the three freshmen that will be coming in to play for the University of Memphis. 2 hours in the books, 1 hour to go. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app and at home.